Coming up this Friday, I will, like last year, scour the area for the best holiday shopping locations. In the 417, my holiday favorites, sponsored by Wampler and Passanisi Trial Attorneys. I will be stopping by Guntech and Nixa, ABC Books, North Glenstone, Ming Auto Beauty Center on Republic Road, Springfield Charcuterie, just for him, Emo's Pizza, and Corwin Automotive of Springfield as well. And all day long, I'll be checking in throughout the day, both on air and Facebook Live. And each location will highlight a gift idea for you to, you know, take into consideration when it comes time for your Christmas shopping. You know, with Amazon and ordering online being something that is almost encouraged by many so you don't go out, we want to make sure that you do keep some of the local businesses in mind.
Yes.
And this is an opportunity for us to do that.
It's kind of like your own version of Oprah's favorite things.
Yeah, and I clearly have the footprint she does, so.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, the value that's offered here.
Nick Reed's favorite things.
Yeah.
These are a few of my favorite things. Okay.
Yep. I'll get there one day.
Yes, you will.
Yeah.
We're rooting on you.
Thanks.
Springfield Fire Department responding to a house fire early this morning in the 3200 block of West Crestview Street. When they got on scene, flames shooting through the roof. Four people and a few pets were inside that house. They were all able to escape unharmed. Springfield Fire Department is investigating what started that fire. Cox Health President and CEO Steve Edwards says the latest death toll from COVID-19 should serve as a wake-up call for politicians to listen to science. Edwards says 30 people have died at Cox in the last 8 days. He says deaths from the pandemic are on track to double by the end of January. And the Highway Patrol says 10 people died in crashes on Missouri roadways over the Thanksgiving holiday weekend. There were no drownings or boating fatalities. Last year, 11 people died in crashes over that same counting period. And that is the latest news.
The KTTS First Alert forecast, sunny, a high of 50 today, mostly clear, 31 tonight, 46 tomorrow with a 50% chance of rain. It is 20, clear. You know, that is an example of what I think is a terrible spokesperson for the COVID response. Talking about the Edwards, the CEO of Cox. This going out there and saying, you need to listen to science. You don't win anyone over that way. I'm so big into meaningful messaging. Like, what is your goal? And I'm assuming the goal of Cox and even Edwards, the CEO, is to get people to do what they want them to do, right? I mean, that's what you want when you communicate to somebody, effective messaging. Trying to dog on people as anti-science is not going to win it. Who believes? I mean, who hires these people? Who thinks, you know what? I think that's very effective messaging right there. We have this many amount that, you know, we've got this set of people that currently listen to everything that we say and they do what we say. We want the rest of these people. I know. Let's send someone out to call them science deniers. I bet that's going to win them over right away. Who believes that? It is just so absolutely ineffective. And I mean, it's not just Cox. You get other institutions will do this too. I mean, they pay people a lot of money to go out and insult the people that they want to win over. It's just nutty to me. Black Lives Matter is a perfect example of this, how you have watched over the past year where a majority of people had a positive view of Black Lives Matter, and now it's like, you know, way down in the bottom of the barrel. And, you know, you're doing it wrong. If your goal is to get people over to your side, to see your vision, you know, insulting them, calling them names, telling them, well, you just need to do this. No, I don't know what books on leadership you're reading, but you might want to check out a different book or two on how to win over people, friends, influence. I want to go back to comment I made in the last hour about Obama and the question whether I had seen his interview on Colbert. And I just can't stand to watch Obama. I just can't. And it's not because I don't like him. There are a lot of people I don't agree with that I can sit and watch. I just feel like of all of the high-profile people out there, there's no one who offers less than Obama does. The awarding of the Nobel Peace Prize to this guy, to me, is actually quite perfect. Because he got it for nothing. He's even acknowledged that. He don't even know why he got it. The people who awarded it to him said, well, maybe we shouldn't have. Because he didn't really do anything, but, you know, we thought that he would. I think that was a perfect snapshot of Obama. I remember when he was a state senator and he was just a nobody that was chosen to spoke at the Democratic National Convention. This stuck out in my mind. And it stuck out in my mind because I remember the media just fawning over him. And it was that convention. I guess this would have been 4 years before he ran. And I remember the media saying, this guy could be president one day. I thought, why? Well, of course, they would ask people like Joe Biden, and he would say, well, he's the first clean black person of high political profile that the country has seen. Harry Reid said, you know, and Harry Reid at the time was the leader of the Senate Democrat, that he was attractive to people because he didn't have the, quote, Negro dialect. And I'm thinking, what a world are we living in here? He would change his position on gay marriage based on what he was running for. When he ran for the state Senate, he was in a pretty liberal district, so he was for gay marriage. Then he tried to run for Congress at one point. And he covered an area, he lost that race. The winner ended up being something that the Clintons were backing. When he ran for the Senate, and a majority of people in Illinois were not for gay marriage at the time, he switched, became against gay marriage. I mean, he just totally switched his positions. And then he was lifted into the presidency. We were told hope and change. Hope for what? Change to what? We were told it was an opportunity for us to make good on our past sins. And, of course, that worked out perfectly. We never get reminded of slavery anymore, do we? The thrill up the leg that we were all supposed to experience as Americans. I mean, the guy really has just been handed every advancement that he ever got. And so I hear him, I mean, for a guy who did less to get into the presidency other than someone who, you know, arguably, I suppose, Gerald Ford, who went from House Majority or Minority Leader or Speaker and Vice President in the presidency because of the Nixon administration, you know, aside from individuals like that. I mean, and even he actually ran for Congress, and he ascended through his hard work to leadership positions. Obama never did any of that. None of it. He did not have to do anything. His first foray into politics, William Ayers did that for him, started out in his living room, decided, I'm going to make you a politician. So when he's given a platform to talk as an authority, which is fine, but I'm like, you have done nothing. And then, and this is what irks me, having everything handed to him all the way up to the presidency, and he has the audacity to complain about this country. I've got to tell you something that may sound controversial, though it shouldn't be. For a guy that talks about this country being racist, if Obama were white, he would never have been president. And I don't think anyone could put up an argument that says otherwise. This is a guy that in a matter of, 6 years, went from a state senator to president of the United States. And this is a country that would not have elected him if he were a white guy. Yet he goes around lecturing us about how we're a racist country. I have no use for that sort of elitism, that sort of privilege. Now, he is getting some news because he's got a book out and he's doing interviews. And, what he's promoting, I don't know. But I just saw this story and I thought it was so perfect because it illustrates and what a hypocrite he is. Fox Business has a story. Obama criticizes Americans for liking cheap gas and big cars more than the environment. In his latest memoir, he criticized Americans because, I mean, why not? What former president doesn't think it's a good idea to go around and trash on the people who elected you? Do you know of any other leader in the world that post their position, they go around the world and they just start crapping all over the people of their own country? And the thing is, there's enough self-hating Americans out there, they're perfectly fine with this. So he's criticized us for liking cheap gas and big cars. Well, how dare us not want to pay $5 at the pump? How dare us want energy independence? How dare the family of four trying to make ends meet being grateful when gas prices drop? See, when you live in Obama's world, you don't care about gas price. When do you think the last time somebody like Obama actually pulled up to a gas pump, put the hose in, and filled her up? But those of us who have budgets, where we do cringe when the prices are as high as they were during his administration, and when we are grateful when they are low as they currently are, we should be ashamed of ourselves. See, it's easy to be liberal when you're rich. I've got to take a break, but then I get to this couple of larger points on this particular issue in just a moment. Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed. Now, I opened up talking about Obama because of a question that somebody posted on Facebook about whether I had seen an interview and how I just find him so irrelevant, but I'm talking about him. So, but it's not because it's about Obama, but it's number one, I just have a real problem with former American presidents going around the world and trashing on Americans, particularly when Americans were so generous to hand them a presidency when they offered nothing for it. And he's got this new memoir out where he dogs on Americans for liking cheap gas and big cars. When you're as filthy, stinking rich as he is, you don't have to worry about gas prices. But all of you people who budget it, who worry about gas prices, shame on you. The comments came during a section in his 700-page book, oh my gosh, A Promised Land. On page 570, the former commander-in-chief recounts a press conference he gave more than a month into the oil spill, now considered one of the largest in history, saying his comments did not adequately express the frustration that he felt. It didn't adequately express to the American people the severity of the situation. Now, this is just a little footnote, but I find it hilarious that Trump got dogged on because he didn't play up and get everyone hysterical over COVID-19, but here Obama's admitting that he did the same thing with the BP oil spill. He writes, reading the transcript now, a decade later, I'm struck by how calm and cogent I sound. This guy's impressed with himself. I'm just struck by that. I'm just in awe of myself. Maybe I'm surprised because the transcript doesn't register what I remember feeling at the time or come close to capturing what I really wanted to say before the assembled White House press corps. Now, how come we don't dog on him for keeping his true feelings to himself? like we did Trump and what he told Woodward about wanting to downplay certain aspects of COVID-19. Here, Obama's fully admitting he was downplaying the oil, that what he truly wanted to say, he didn't. Now, what I wanted to bring up, and this is just absolute typical career politician, is he talks about, you know, the regulatory agencies and you know, the problems that were there, and chastise Americans for not being willing to foot the bill for technology to quickly plug the hole, you know, blaming Americans. Said the only way to truly prevent another catastrophe like the 2010 Deepwater Horizon oil spill was to stop drilling entirely. But he said that wasn't going to happen because at the end of the day, Americans love cheap gas and big cars more than we care for the environment. So that's what he blames it on. The reason that there wasn't enough regulatory mechanisms in place that would require it's BP, who operated the facility there that caused the oil spill, that would have forced them to take whatever sort of necessary precautions to occur. It was because you and I were selfish. As Americans, we're too cheap to buy more expensive gas. Now, I immediately remembered something. I have these little nuggets in my head of moments in history. And I went back and grabbed a piece from Politico. And this piece was not too long. It was just written a couple of years after the BP oil spill. The headline, Obama is the biggest recipient of BP cash. While the BP oil geyser pumps millions of gallons of petroleum into the Gulf of Mexico, President Barack Obama and members of Congress may have to answer for the millions in campaign contributions that have been taken from the oil and gas giant over the years. BP and its employees have given more than $3.5 million to federal candidates over the past 20 years, with the largest chunk of their money going to Barack Obama. While he was in the Senate and running for president, Obama received a total of $77,051 from the oil giant and is the top recipient of BP PAC and individual money over the past 20 years, according to financial disclosure records. So here you've got this guy writing a memoir blaming you. See, the whole idea here is that as president, he could have put these regulations on BP oil. He could have put additional regulations beyond what he did to prevent these things from happening, but you would have just pitched a fit because you like cheap gas too much. That's why. It has nothing to do with the fact that he was the single largest recipient of money from BP. It's interesting that that part isn't highlighted in the article. And I'm sure not in his book, though I haven't read it, nor will I. Springfield's Talk 104.1, I'm Nick Reed. Turner's Rock, Springfield's newest senior living community, opening, in December. That's right. Luxury residential community. Serves seniors with a wide variety of options. Seniors today are different than seniors were 20, 30 years ago. Being a senior meant once upon a time, for most people, active life was over. I remember going to visit my grandma in Dent County, and there was this house in her neighborhood. And every time we passed it, there was this couple that just sat out on the front porch. They were, in my mind, they were 100 years old. I don't know how old they actually were. I was a kid. Everyone with wrinkles is 100 years old when you're a kid. And I just remember thinking how boring that must be. You know, when you're a kid, you can't stand the thought of just sitting there. Every time, they were just sitting out there. And while some people certainly enjoy sitting around and watching the sunset, being a senior today is just much different than it once was, and that is reflected in Turner's Rock. For active residents, a resort-style pool, a game room with pool tables, a theater, a movie theater, a bistro, a rooftop pub, a salon. You can get manicures, pedicures, your hair done. There's independent living, obviously, but there's also assisted living and memory care. So 20 years from now, when you may need actually a little bit of extra help, you don't have to leave home because that is provided at Turner's Rock Living, as is memory care when that time comes as well. You can get more information, turnersrockliving.com, or give them a call, 520-8204, or drive by, stop in their welcome center. They're located just off 65 and Sunshine. Let's do a traffic update, and then I want to talk about, this is just such an incredible story, about a New York congressional race in which the Republican was up by roughly 30,000 votes until they started recounting, couldn't quite get it there, and then a Democrat judge said, you know what, I'm going to check these ballots personally, just me, and see what I can find. And guess what happened? Oh, your instincts are correct. Don Luzader now with traffic. I'm Nick Reed on Springfield's Talk 104.1. Don Luzader and latest news update.
I love the Christmas music.
I know.
That's awesome.
Sarah put that
very
in.
Good, Sarah. Good choice. I love that song. Springfield firefighters say that four people and a few pets have been able to escape a home that caught fire this morning on Crestview, west of Golden in Springfield. According to the fire department, when crews got on the scene, flames were shooting through the roof. The house did have structural damage on the backside of the home. The fire department is investigating what happened. A man charged with stuffing his wife's body in a freezer in Marshfield will go to trial next November. Larry Dinwiddie is charged with killing his wife, Cynthia. Court records say Dinwiddie admitted to killing her with a hammer after a fight. The victim's body was locked in a storage unit for 4 years before authorities in Webster County found her. And that is the latest news.
KTTS First Alert Forecast, sponsored by St. Clair of the Ozarks Home Improvements. Discounts, 20%. Plus, somebody asked me about this yesterday. I said, oh, who is that? Who is that that has the free storm door with four windows or siding? St. Clair of the Ozarks Home Improvements. Sunny, 50 for a high today, 31 for a low tonight. 50% chance of rain tomorrow afternoon with a high of 46. And Thursday, a 50% chance of rain with a high of 42. It's 21 and sunny, so still cold. A New York congressional race came down to a judge personally reviewing individual spoiled ballots. Spoiled ballots are ballots that are not supposed to count because there's a screw-up on them. Sometimes you can't tell how they were supposed to vote because they marked it all goofy. Sometimes they didn't sign it and the law requires that it be signed. Sometimes the signature clearly isn't the signature of the person who is registered to vote under that name. There are a number of reasons. Ultimately, it's because it's a violation of the law. Well, one of the problems that we've had here in this country is you've had these areas where Democrats are running things where they just start counting them anyway. So the New York congressional race came down to a judge personally reviewing individual spoiled ballots, resulting in the Democratic incumbent going from around 28,000 votes behind to now taking a 13-vote lead and declaring victory. I mean, come on, you conspiracy theorists who think Democrats steal elections. I mean, there's no evidence of that anywhere at all. Hot Air editor Jazz Shaw tweeted out in New York 22, it's the 22nd district, the Democratic incumbent was trailing by almost 30,000K on election night. The mail-in ballots got him close. Then a Democrat judge from Syracuse ruled that he would personally review all of the spoiled ballots that had been rejected. Guess what happened next? The judge miraculously found enough ballots that he felt were okay, and the incumbent now leads by 13 votes. Freshman Representative Anthony Brindisi said this process and the integrity of our elections are critical to our republic. This judicial review has been fair, open, honest, and transparent. and I remain confident that voters' voices will be heard. In January, I'll be sworn in and continue to work with both parties and stand up to anyone on behalf of the New York's 22nd district. Now, Brindisi trailed the Republican challenger, Claudia Tenney, by about 28,000 votes on election night. The gap closed over the next few weeks with just 100 to 200 votes as mail-in ballots were counted. Despite Tenney's slim lead, Owego County State Supreme Court Justice Scott Del Conte issued an injunction to block election officials certifying the results, setting the stage for Brindisi's 13-vote lead. See how it works? The Trump campaign team is Republicans. When there are clear issues and allegations, affidavits, regarding potential voter fraud and certain voter irregularities, injunctions are denied, for the most part. Judges throw the case out. But here, yet another seat that had flipped to a Republican, narrowing the lead that the Democrats had in the House to an even smaller margin, just decides to step in and says, I'll be counting these. And lo and behold, finds just enough, determines that these ballots that were spoiled ballots, there were just enough in order to give the Democrat a victory. The reason that Americans are losing faith in our democratic process of choosing elected officials is because of stories like this. It isn't because of Donald Trump. And these things are not myths. Can you even begin to imagine? I mean, it would never happen. If you had a Republican incumbent and the votes came in and the Democrat was winning by 28,000 votes, and then a Trump appointed judge steps in and says, I'm going to personally hand check these ballots. And then, oh, look at that. The Republican won. The media would go apoplectic. But this, of course, is fair and should give us a secure feeling about our democracy at work. Meanwhile, Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, who has been under attack by Trump, what was the latest? He's been on him and the governor. Yesterday, he said that his office is investigating more than 250 claims of voting irregularities connected with the November election. Now, this is the same guy that not just a couple weeks ago said that the election went off just wonderfully. It was perhaps the smoothest that ever existed. And Trump, because of the obvious irregularities in Georgia, has just been railing on these guys. And they're Republicans. Speaking to reporters from the state capitol yesterday, Raffensperger said his office is investigating any credible claims that groups are working to register ineligible people to vote ahead of a high-profile runoff election for Georgia's two U.S. Senate seats. He said his office's 23 investigators are also continuing to look into allegations of problems with absentee ballots, as well as claims of people who voted twice, people who cast a ballot in a dead person's name, and non-residents who voted in Georgia. See, here is the trouble. This is the rock and the hard place that the Secretary of State in Georgia is in. Now, he's a Republican. But he's one of these Republicans who has not been backing Trump. And he's lashed out at Trump. He's one of these Republicans that just wants to see Trump concede this thing, to give it all up, to quit making these claims. But on the other hand, Republicans as an establishment are very worried about this upcoming race in Georgia. And so he's got to be getting pressure from them as well, saying, listen, I know. You know, Trump's running all over the place with Giuliani, and they're just calling out voter fraud at every little tiny thing that they see. And even if there is some voter fraud, it doesn't It's not going to ultimately. It surely did not alter the outcome of the election, but it kind of sort of could in the upcoming special election in Georgia. And that could mean Democrats controlling everything. So dismissing any allegations of voter fraud from the Trump campaign is only going to make it easier for Democrats to continue to do it. Especially if there are certain organizations that are behind it, certain people that have their hand in it. And so I suspect what's happening here is that the Republican establishment is saying, okay, listen, if you were, you know, Arizona or Nevada or Wisconsin or Pennsylvania, this would just be fine. You can go ahead and trash all over the Trump people all you want. But the Senate is up for grabs in this upcoming election. So we kind of like to make sure that there isn't a significant amount of voter fraud going on. We'd like to not lose control of the Senate. We'd like to not lose control of the Senate legitimately, but we certainly don't want to lose control of the Senate illegitimately. And I believe that's probably what's forcing his hand here. Meanwhile, a federal judge has ordered voting machines in three Georgia counties to be subject to expert examination in a lawsuit with a flurry of legal activities during the course of the day, Sunday, regarding the status of Dominion voting machines in Georgia. Efforts by the plaintiffs in the lawsuit brought by Sidney Powell and Lynn Wood to have them preserved in their present condition until plaintiffs' experts could examine them. Apparently, at some point, the plaintiffs learned that all devices in Georgia were going to be wiped clean of data. You know, like with a cloth. In response, plaintiffs filed an emergency motion with Federal District Judge Timothy Batten seeking an emergency temporary restraining order directing the defendants to maintain the machines in their current condition until such a time as they can be subjected to examination and testified by plaintiff's experts. So a judge has said you cannot wipe these things clean. Cannot hit the reset button on them. Now, I'm going to make a suggestion to you. I think that there is a good possibility that they'll do it anyway. And then someone will demand answers to know who did it, and no one will know. And then we'll all be told it was just some sort of clerical error. It was some sort of glitch. And that ultimately it would not have changed the outcome of the election. So we all need to come together behind Joe Biden so that we can move forward and not further damage the credibility of our democracy. Springfield's Talk 104.1, I'm Nick Reed. A majority of Republicans, this is Rasmussen polling, are convinced that the election was stolen by Democrats. Statistical improbability, sworn affidavits, odd occurrences, and much more, of course, plagued the election. But what's interesting is that 30% of Democrats also believe that it's likely that they stole the election. 30%. Now, I'm telling you right now, that's a low number. That's 30%. You know that there are Democrats that will never admit to themselves, or even if they do to themselves, to a pollster, they think their party stole the election. So if you have 30% of Democrats admitting that they believe that their party stole the presidential election, you've got to wonder how much higher it is than that. I mean, I don't think it's unreasonable to think twice as many Democrats actually believe that, which would be 60%. But even 30% admitting it? Republicans overwhelmingly believe the election was stolen. 75% independent voters, 39% overall. Nearly half the country believes the election's illegitimate, 47%. Now, there were a couple of, well, there have been some hearings going on. Arizona had a hearing yesterday, and you can't really see or even learn anything about these hearings with the major networks. One of the individuals that spoke, let's see, I'm trying to check my time here. All right. This is Army Colonel Phil Waldron. And he is an expert on automated voting machines.
and you know, this he's an expert on it. So he was called to testify regarding some of these machines that we're told are just the most safe, secure machines ever in the history of mankind.
A better view.
I think you need to explain it.
So this is a Spiderfoot reconnaissance tool that looked at DominionVoting.com network that was analyzed on November 3rd. And basically this shows vulnerabilities. It shows volumetric internet traffic, the raw data. It shows all of the web servers, physical coordinates, all the vulnerabilities that are associated with the server. But basically it does show that this was connected to the internet on voting day, and the volume of traffic was significant, and the vulnerabilities there are plenty of vulnerabilities that hackers could penetrate the system.
Can you tell if some of those communications went outside the United States?
We did observe packet traffic that were going from the U.S. Now, we don't know if it was specifically Dominion traffic going, but to a server in Frankfurt.
In Frankfurt, Germany.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor.
And who has it?
Colonel Waldron, could you just take a moment and explain packet traffic? Because there's probably a lot of folks who are not sure what that is.
So it's bits of information that are sent over the internet from in internet protocol from one point to another.
And what's in Frankfurt, Germany that would be of interest?
Well, we looked prior to the election, one of our white hat hackers, and found that there was traffic in a Seidel server. Seidel is one of the companies, and I can show you the we mentioned before the interconnectedness. Not that one. The interconnectedness of these companies. So this is sort of a historical link to all the voting companies, and we got Smartmatic in the middle. It's a licensor to Dominion voting systems. Seidel runs election night reporting through SOE software and Clarity Elections over here. And Clarity Elections is if you click up on a lot of the county and Secretary of State voting systems, it'll pop up as property of Clarity Elections. So it doesn't really belong to the counties, it doesn't really belong to you, it really belongs to Clarity Elections.
Just to make it simple, a Dominion machine that I go in and vote, it is susceptible to easily having that vote changed from the outside, or by them in particular?
By an authorized user or an unauthorized user.
By an authorized or unauthorized user?
Correct.
As
a hacker. A hacker.
A hacker. So my vote is only as good as the integrity of Dominion and all the hackers that exist that can get into the Dominion machine.
Your vote is not as secure as your Venmo account.
Pardon me, say that one more time.
Your vote is not as secure as your Venmo account.
Can you think of any reason why anyone would hire them to count votes in the United States?
I could postulate a lot of...
Are any of them good reasons?
They have a strong lobby. They work with the government. They work with state government agencies, and they've got the infrastructure to sell their services.
All right. So that was the first witness at the Arizona hearing yesterday. And of course, Mayor Giuliani asking some questions there, as well as some others. That right there, what you heard, is what Democrats thought Robert Mueller was going to be providing, that sort of information. Smoking guns. People that said, no, here's what we saw. Now, he's a guy, so this is what we observed. This is what we do. And we saw traffic on, this was connected to the internet while voting. And we watched these packets of information going back and forth out of the United States. These hearings should be on every major network, not just the cable news networks. And everything that Adam Schiff was claiming in terms of witnesses on Russian collusion that never happened, this is the sort of stuff that Democrats believe was going to be presented. Actual substantial information, though it never was. We've got Don Luzader with traffic. Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed. In addition to information about the Springfield Symphony Orchestra's Christmas cookies that you can find at KSGF.com, we also have links to the new KSGF app for your iPhone or your Droid, whatever it might be. You can find it all at KSGF.com. News in 60 seconds. I'm Nick Reed.